Session number 12895, rule 3.
Crew Captain Wilson MacDonald, Reel 3. How much did you depend on the efficiency of ground control to vector you?
The ground crews.
The ground control?
The ground control. Beg your pardon. Oh, yes. Ground control was absolutely invaluable. Invaluable, to say the least. It was absolutely essential that we stood. We carried out the orders that were given to make our interceptions. Without radar, we would have been at sixes and sevens, and I doubt if we would have been as successful as we were during the Battle of Britain. Because we knew immediately, you see, we were sitting at dispersal. I think I've already mentioned this. We're sitting at dispersal on the telephone. There would be one of the pilots on the telephone to the ground control. The ground control would then come through and they would keep us informed of what was happening. They'd say to us, right, well, they're starting to take off. They're starting mass around Cherbourg. The bellboy is starting to build up around Cherbourg. And they would keep us informed exactly. And they'd say, well, now we'll probably be scrambling you in about 15 minutes' time. As soon as we know the bellboat has formed and has got its height and has set course, we will call you up and scramble you. So we knew to that extent where we were going. And they would give us a vector on the ground before we took off. They would say, fly 180 degrees. And Angels 25,000 feet. So we got all that before we actually got in the air. So the ground control was invaluable. And I think everybody who fought in the Battle of Britain would say that was it. It was quite marvellous. Without it, we would have been completely lost.
Did you make wills? Did you all make wills?
Wills? Do you mean write wills?
Yes.
No, never asked to. Nobody ever suggested wills, no.
Were you all superstitious?
No, never, no superstition at all. No.
Did you have any pets during the Battle of Britain? Dogs or other pets? Dogs or other pets?
Dogs or pets. No, I didn't, no. I didn't have any dogs or cats or anything, no. No pets.
Now, after the Battle of Britain, 213 Squadron went to Egypt. Can you tell me about the squadron going to Egypt?
Oh, yes, 42? I can. Well, we got as far as Leckenfield, didn't we, after the battle?
Yes.
All right. We then went on to Castletown, which is right in the north of Scotland, and we were used up there to defend the north of Scotland because the convoys were being attacked by the Condors. The Condors, these huge big four-engine German bombers, used to fly through the streets there or around the islands there, and go out to the Atlantic and attack the convoys in the Atlantic. And then they would return the same way. Or else they would go down land in France. But anyway, I had part of my squadron in Castletown, which is an airfield in the very north of Scotland, near where the Queen Mother has her castle. She wasn't there at that time. And then We had a part of my squadron in the Orkneys and part of my squadron in the Shetlands, all for to try and shoot down these condors which were coming round the north of Scotland, going out to attack these convoys, which of course was a serious threat to the welfare of Britain. So it was a very important job. Now, we never intercepted any of these condors. But I'll tell you a story. There was an instructor at Aberystwyth when I was there, called Deacon, Flight Lieutenant Deacon. And he transferred at some stage or other to the Royal Navy, which many of us were invited to transfer to the Fleet Air Arm. Anyway, he did. And he was on his way in a string bag flying up the west coast of Scotland to get Castletown to refueling before going across to the Orkneys. And he ran out of fuel and he landed on a beach near very north point of Scotland, what the devil is called.
John of Groats.
No, on the west.
Cape Wrath.
Cape Wrath, yeah. He landed on the beach near Cape Wrath, and while he was. And he got out of his aeroplane. He had two chaps in the string bag, because he had the navigator and a gun operator, and he was the pilot of the string bag. Deacon, and because he came to Castletown where we were based and related to me his experience while he was sitting on the beach waiting to be rescued by the RAF from Castletown, that he watched two condors going past at that height above the sea,
right
close in. So low, right below any radar, and unknown to anybody except him, as from a military point of view. And these two convoys are on their way out. And he said the rear gunner of one of them waved to him. And that was Deacon, who was by this time was a lieutenant in the, having switched from the RAF to the Royal Navy, was a lieutenant in the Navy. So that information was passed on to the operations people, and so we had then, of course, started to keep us as low as possible to try and intercept these fellows. But we never got another opportunity like that the whole time we were there, until eventually we were then posted to the Far East, at least to the Middle East. And we spent the winter there, 1941. In October 1941, I think it was, that we set sail for the Middle East. I took the squadron to the Middle East by carrier. We carried the Furious, HMS Furious. We joined the HMS Furious with new aeroplanes. The aeroplanes had been sitting on the Furious before we arrived. Three squadrons of us on board the Furious.
This is still Hurricanes?
All Hurricanes, yes. Three squadrons of us. And we set sail with a naval convoy, a very big naval convoy of destroyers and cruisers for Gibraltar, and we arrived at Gibraltar in a reasonable few days, where the Ark Royal was waiting for us, and so we shipped one squadron onto the Ark Royal overnight, and we then set sail when the Navy were all ready. They set sail, and instead of going through the straits, we went sailing out into the Atlantic We sailed out into the Atlantic for all overnight until the early hours of the morning, when we suddenly looked out of our portholes or whatever we were on the dock. We then saw ourselves sailing back with Gibraltar on the left-hand side, coming back. They nearly had gone out to defeat the enemy, obviously. So then we came back into the Mediterranean, where we flew off with 400 miles to go. We were led by the Royal Navy flying Fulmos. My Fulmos leader, whose name was Lieutenant Commander Hare, H-A-R-E, we got as far as Cape Bon when he said, "Oh, sorry, I can't take you any further. We're going to Malta to begin with, you see." And he said, "I'm very sorry, my engine's packing up. I'll have to go and land in Cape Bon." Of course, that meant being a prisoner of war, which he was. He was a prisoner of war, and I met him after the war. Met him in the RAF Club after the war, believe it or not. He had survived the war. He had been a prisoner and taken to Germany as a prisoner of war. Anyway, I had just led my squadron to Malta. I had a map, and so I led my squadron to Malta, where we landed. And we were then informed that we were to go to Crete the following day, because Crete was in a terrible state by this time. And so, following day, we were all teed up to go, when suddenly the word came through to me that Crete had fallen. And the orders were that, incidentally, first of all, the order came through to me that we were to land at Heraklion. And the British were at one end of the airfield, Heraklion airfield in Crete, and the Germans were at the other end because they'd dropped all their parachute troops on Crete by this time. So they then said, this is in Malta, where then the operation was cancelled, thank God, thank God. So we were told, all right, well, we'll keep one squadron here, and two squadrons will fly on, my squadron will fly on to Almeria. Go straight through. We did 1,000 miles. It was quite a lot of flying in those days with a hurricane. We had to overload fuel tanks, carried a lot of extra fuel, and we all made it to Almeria from Malta, and where we landed. And then from there, we went up to Aberystwyth, funnily enough, the place where I had been trained and did my advanced training in the RAF.
What kind of operations were you meant to do in Egypt?
Well, my squadron, we were then posted as a squadron. We were posted
in the Western Desert?
Palestine. We did the war against the Vichy French in Palestine. That was the first thing we did. And we had to fight there in small batches of airplanes right up through Lydda. We fought the Vichy French right up into Aleppo. And then after that, after the Vichy French gave in, they went to Damascus. They finished in Damascus, and they gave in and threw up the sponge in Damascus. And then I reformed the squadron and took it to Cyprus.
What was the campaign in Syria like?
It was rather half-hearted. There was very little air opposition, practically no air opposition. We supported the ground troops mostly. with support of the ground troops, Brucey.
By ground attacks?
By ground attacks, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we did that, but that didn't last very long. It was a very short affair. And I came back I came back to the Suez Canal, reformed my squadron, and took it to Cyprus. Reformed it and took it to Cyprus for the defense of Cyprus. We thought that we were going to be attacked by the Germans. Thought the Germans were going to come through Turkey. That was really the threat at that time. This time the Western desert was fairly well contained. But the 9th Army went up, you see, with us up in Aleppo. And so the 9th Army, by General Wilson, and commanded by General Wilson, they went up there. So we were sent to Cyprus as a squadron, and we were always expected to operate from there. And we had a we were expecting to operate against the Germans if they decided to come through Turkey. We never knew which way the Turks were going to jump at that time. So we stayed some time there. And then I left the squadron. We came back to the Middle East. We came back to Egypt. And I was posted from the squadron to Jerusalem, of all places.
To do what?
Staff officer at Jerusalem, the headquarters of Levant.
Were you involved in any more operational work during the rest of the war?
Oh, yes, I was. I went to Italy. I went up to Jerusalem to Levant headquarters, where I spent about 8 months there. And then from there I was posted to command a new gunnery school in Egypt, which I formed, a new gunnery school to teach the fighter pilots, the Western Desert fighter pilots, to shoot better. And then from there, I formed that gunnery school. I ran it for a few months, and then I was posted to Italy to form a fighter wing there under the Balkan Air Force. In the Balkan Air Force, where I formed 283 Wing, with Mustang fighters, and one of the squadrons, and Spitfires. But funnily enough, the Mustang squadron, you know what the name of the squadron was? 213 Squadron, wasn't that extraordinary? 213 Squadron was posted there under my command again, not through any arrangement of mine. It just so happened that they suddenly had been re-equipped with these American fighters, Mustangs, the P-51s, and they were posted to Italy from Egypt, and they joined my wing, 283 Wing, up at Biferno, where we were under the Balkan Air Force operating from there. Our task was to support the partisans in
Yugoslavia,
Greece. We flew right down to Greece, and our area of attack was the whole of that area right up to Germany, shall we say. Not that we did much there, but we used to help the Americans. The Americans had huge forces in Italy at that time to support which were operating against the Germans in Germany and France. So we used to do quite a bit of support work to support the B-51s, which were the American daylight bombers. And we used to take them so far, supporting them up on their raids against the German main forces in Germany at that time. But our, shall we say, as we came under the Balkan Air Force, as we were part of the Balkan Air Force, our main task was to support the Pakistanis against the Germans. The Germans were operating in Greece and Yugoslavia and Albania, and so we most of my work, again with 213 Squadron at that time, was attacking the German forces on the ground. So we were directed by the partisans where the German forces were being forced back by the Pakistanis. So they would ask for air attacks, so we used to come and do air attacks against the Germans in support of the partisans. And so that was our main task there, really. And so we never knew where we were going to be, from whether our main attacks would be in Greece or Yugoslavia or Albania. So wherever the Germans were and wherever the partisans were attacking them, we were their support under direction of the Balkan Air Force. That's how it worked out.
How effective do you think those raids were?
I think we were pretty effective, yes. I think we did a lot of damage. To the Germans. I think we did a lot of damage. But we attacked bridges and attacked big concentrations of Germans. We attacked, for instance, the King's Palace in Albania, which was full of Germans. And when we attacked the front side of the palace, the Germans jumped out of the rear windows on the ends of large red curtains. I remember that distinctly, watching the Germans coming out, hanging onto the red curtains as they flew out of the back windows of the palace, the Royal Palace of Tirana in Albania. Oh dear. Yes, I remember that. That was one of the highlights of the war in Yugoslavia.
Was that done by Mustangs or Spitfires?
That was Mustangs. That was Mustangs. Mustangs and Spitfires. And we also had bowfighters. Bowfighters with rockets. We had bowfighters and rockets. At that time, I had two South African squadrons in my 283 wing, 18, number 19 and 16. They were both South African squadrons commanded by South African pilots flying the aeroplanes, and South African ground crews supporting them. They were a first-class outfit. They were really great. And the sort of thing that we used to do, I used to fly, 213 Squadron used to keep, I had a private Mustang, which 213, I didn't have any ground crew, so they looked after my private Mustang. So I led 213 Squadron with my Mustang, and then we used to go in and attack wherever the Germans were, and with machine guns, soften them up. And then the two South African squadrons would follow on with their bow fighters and rockets. So they attacked with the rockets. They were the chaps who did the most serious damage to the Germans, whereas we had just softened them up. And then we used to then returned to base with nothing more to do. Just we only made one attack on wherever it was, because they fired off all their rockets, and that was, and we had probably got rid of most of our, we got rid of most of our machine gun bullets anyway. So I think that was it, and we attacked. I did some rather sort of private raiding at that time, because I used to find out what were targets. You know, for instance, there was one. The Royal Navy were being or up there in the Adriatic, and they were being worried. What they were doing there, I never quite understood, but the Royal Navy were doing big operations in that area, and the Germans had set themselves up on an island near Dubrovnik, and they had set themselves up on this island there, and we were told we must get rid of them somehow or other, and so I led an attack on this island, again with Mustangs leading and bullfighters following. So we attacked this island, and after we attacked it, I thought I would send them all back to base. So I sent them back to, we were operating from Italy, although we were the Balkan, we were operating from Viferno. I told you that already, I think, didn't I?
Yes.
So I sent them back, and I thought, well, I'd get in touch with the destroyer, which was tooling just inside the island, between the island and the mainland. So I called them up on the RT. He said, I wonder if you could direct our fire for us. So I said, yes, of course I could. So I said, well, start firing, and I'll tell you where your shells are falling. And so I direct them, not knowing the jargon of how to direct. I said, your shells are over, or your shells are short, or your shells are on target. And I spent about 15, 20 minutes doing this, helping the Royal Navy to do this. But then they said they assumed that they had run out of ammunition, and that was the end of it. So I returned to Viferno and reported it to the Balkan headquarters at Bari. I said, look here, I supported the Royal Navy, which I was very pleased to do, and they sent a signal to Balkan. I had been a great help to them. This was me all by myself by this time. Then the other thing was, on another occasion, the Royal Navy again said that they had been attacked. There was a German torpedo boat at Split, at the island, on the harbour at Split, which was worrying the life out of them. And it was in harbour on a certain occasion, on a certain day, which I can't remember the date, of course. But anyway, I took the CEO of 213 Squadron, whose name was Peter Vaughan Fowler. I took him as my number two. And we went off to attack this torpedo boat, this German torpedo boat, was in